Off the Ball. GAA.
I think that I wouldn't be writing anything in stone yet. You know, I wouldn't be proclaiming that we have a 2010 here. I wouldn't be proclaiming we're on the brink of a 5 in a row either. But I think it's a very enjoyable era of Gaelic football that we're in as teams try and figure themselves out.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie.
Okay, you're very welcome along to this week's episode of Inside the Odds. This is our Premier League preview show on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. Mick is here, David's here, fresh off his lap of honour for having won this week's quiz. Spoiler alert. Hey, well, I run through the fixtures very quickly just so everybody's set the table. Leeds versus Burnley tonight. Burnley, obviously, with a new manager. Leeds, off the disappointment of getting knocked out in the semi-final of the Cup under difficult circumstances, are probably safe, but would still like an L, 1 or 2 points.
Yeah, if everybody keeps winning, that's the issue, isn't it? Like, if we could actually get to kind of a 44-pointer this year, it's still unlikely, I'd say.
It is. It's not impossible, because tomorrow it's Brentford versus West Ham at 3 o'clock. And Brentford, obviously, are... I was going to say still unbeaten, but they're not now. Their form isn't great at the moment compared to where it was. But with West Ham having more need, you wouldn't be terribly surprised if West Ham were to win that. Wolves versus Sunderland is a 3 o'clock kickoff with nothing specific riding on it now that Sunderland were beaten 5-0 last weekend. Newcastle versus Brighton. There seems to be a lot riding on what's happening. There's a 2-day offsite happening with the hierarchy, the club hierarchy at Newcastle, which off the back of the Live news is just a little bit concerning for the Saudi investment future at Newcastle. We'll see if everybody comes out of that and goes, no, we're going to sign a lot more Nick Voltamadas, or if they're going to have to sell all their best players, Anthony Gordon to Bayern specifically. Arsenal play Fulham at 5:30, squeaky bum time on Saturday evening. Bournemouth versus Palace is 2 o'clock on Sunday. Manchester United versus Liverpool is 3:30. It's live on OTV with Stephen Doyle and Darren Gibson on duty for that one. Aston Villa and Spurs is the weird time at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. Don't know what to think about Villa's current form. Chelsea versus Nottingham Forest is 3 o'clock on Monday. And then to finish the weekend at the Hill Dickinson, it's Everton, who are still scrapping for... they're not quite sure exactly what, but a place in Europe anyway, some level, against Manchester City, by which point Man City could be 6 points behind.
Yeah, tough game for City. Like, it's not the place you want to go in a title run in when you're trying to just like collect all the points. Up against the last session of the snooker final as well, you know, watching John Higgins scrape to an 18-17 win. Having played like every available frame in the entire tournament.
Has that ever happened?
I don't know. I didn't have a 10-9 in the first round, did he?
No.
Oh, pity, because it was feeling like it was going that way.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to start with Man United versus Liverpool. Obviously, the game of the week, which means it's the game that NoviBet will offer up to a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League game of the weekend. Every weekend, NoviBet are offering the best value on football betting with a risk-free bet builder on all the biggest Premier League and Champions League matches. It's also the game for our off-the-ball bet builder of the week. How did we get on last week, Mick? Hit the post?
I suppose, yeah. We missed out. We were a couple of corners short on the Arsenal-Newcastle game. I kind of feel like we talked our way through the game pretty well. Like, it was Arsenal 1-0 or 2-0 was kind of the way the bet builder worked out. Under 2.5 goals and Arsenal to win. They won 1-0, but unfortunately they didn't have enough corners in the game. Now, the main reason for that was Newcastle only had one in the entire game. If Newcastle had pulled their bloody finger out even a small bit, we would have been home and dry. But sure, another close one, Ger.
Stop being useless, Newcastle, is your message to Eddie Howe's team.
Eddie Howe, who, I don't know, is pressure off for Eddie Howe then when they like lose every game for the whole second half of the season, but then it turns out that the country who's bankrolling your operation is like deciding they couldn't be bothered anymore.
Yeah.
Suddenly the old Eddie Howe problem seems a little bit quaint for Newcastle, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, they're on 42 points, like, and...
I was looking at that.
Yeah, like, I don't think they're going to get relegated, but they are looking over their shoulders rather than looking what's ahead of them, so...
Spurs and West Ham both win this weekend, which isn't impossible.
It's panic stations for...
Yeah.
Leeds and Newcastle? No, I wouldn't say panic stations, not yet.
Yeah.
You know, mild like distress concern. Stations.
Yeah.
Like, West Ham went down at 42, didn't they?
That and was, they, I think, the But the whole 40-point thing that almost never comes. Season.
No, they stayed up that year.
They stayed up that year, sure,
because of
the cheat.
Well,
because they beaten Manchester United on the last side of the season,
I'm mixing these up.
West Ham went down anyway with a very high number of points.
Yeah.
Similar to 42. Maybe could have been 41, I don't know, but...
No, I think you're right.
What's your bet builder for Man United Liverpool?
I see goals. I see a bit of crack in this game of two teams that are still a little bit dodgy at the back. So I went for, you might have it there in front of you.
We do, yep. Yeah, goals, so, over under, over 3.5.
Over
both
three.
Teams score, yes. Goal or assist, Bruno Fernandes. Shots on target, Dominic Szoboszlai. Szoboszlai.
Over a half. Right. So we need a shot on target for Szoboszlai. And it works out 7-2. On NoviBet, so that is our bet builder of the week. Look, Fernandez, that assist thing is now getting to a point where it's like it almost is happening every game, and it's something we're talking about. There's a, I think this game is good for both teams because there's an element of their season fizzling out a little bit that won't happen for another week because they're playing each other. I think both of them are fairly safe and secure third and fourth place at the moment. So yeah, I think there'll be a bit of, I think this could be of just a really entertaining Liverpool United game that we don't always get. Like, there's a lot of nil alls in this fixture.
That's my one concern here, is that you are undervaluing the amount of stress that the players will feel because of the supporters in this fixture versus the reality of the situation that they've nothing to play for, essentially.
So it's I look, it's just a sense. I've kind of a feeling that it's kind of like there's a, the pressure is off in everything but this fixture. So both teams are going to go and try and win it. And I also think both teams are like incredibly dodgy, you know what I mean? And are prone to like howlers and silly mistakes. You're only looking for more than, it's more than 2.5 goals, isn't it? Or more than 3.5, sorry. So you're looking at, you know, 3-1 or, you know, 2-2. Yeah. So, you know, and then with that, you expect like Fernandez to be involved in it. So that's kind of where I'm going with it. And obviously, yeah, I always like a little bit of interest in Szoboszlai because I feel like he's just a good player to watch. And watching him for 90 minutes, waiting for him to have his 40 yard shot into the top corner or straight at the goalkeeper, either way, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you get to this part of the season and like kind of mad things kind of happen. Like something, like even that Villa Sunderland game a few weeks ago, which was just a bit crazy. I think that's probably a good way to think about this weekend's game. I know there has been a history of nil-nils, but for United, there's only 2 points to guarantee the Champions League qualification, and
what better place to do it?
No better way to do it against Liverpool. So, yeah, United, like, even like if this game, if United do win the game, and Michael Carrick is thinking, I'm going to be the manager here next season, maybe it's already decided, but maybe it's not. But what of a, you know, feel good atmosphere that'd be around Old Trafford if Man United are coming off the pitch having beaten Liverpool to secure a Champions League football for next season?
I, to that point, I do actually think that matters. It's like last year we had them here, they had, you know, Isak was back in form and playing, and they had Verts and we beat them. That does matter a little bit in just building confidence.
How you go into next season, yeah.
Obviously that's only if he stays. If he goes and new manager comes in and goes, nothing matters. Nothing mattered that you did last season. The slate is clean.
Possibly for both teams.
Come on down.
Possibly for both teams. Like if both managers disappear or one of them, it might change things. But yeah, I do think there's a setting down a marker element to it. I think United, I think they make it to Champions League, it's ultimately seen as a success. How they go about the next few games, is it a success worthy of keeping on the interim manager who we kind of decided beforehand was going to be very much an interim manager, and we wouldn't make the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer approach. I think Carrick's standards, I think the you know, there's a curve on expectation on Carrick where I think he is almost unfair because of the experience that they had with Solskjaer before. And if you even look at the experience with Solskjaer and the overall results of United, David, like in comparison to what happened afterwards, we possibly even look at it too negatively.
On the Solskjaer?
Yeah. On his overall, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think right man for the job ultimately, but he did a better job than the two managers that followed him.
He did, like, and I suppose we're at that kind of period where it was like 10, 12 games after when Solskjaer was being told by every pundit in the up and down the country to be like, oh, he should be given the job. I still have a lot of worries about giving Michael Carrick the job when, you know, you're playing at home to Brentford and you're 2-0 up and you bring on a right back and you go to five at the back. Like, don't get me wrong, Brentford have been good this season, but like, it is still Brentford. I think some of the performances in the last couple of games have been ropey-ish. The structure of the team is questionable. And Casemiro, who's got like 9 goals this season, who's going in the summer, is going to be a huge loss for next season. So how is he replaced?
Is he going to be a huge loss?
Oh, he absolutely is going to be a huge loss. Like, what other midfielder do Manchester United have?
I'd be very loath to play the poor out for Manchester United given the amount of money that they spend on the squad, but given how badly they've done it, I do look at that team a lot and think he is so limited in the options he has. Yeah. Because there are so many players who are not good enough. When Mainoo was injured late notice a few weeks ago, Ugarte was brought in and he may as well have not been there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he actually like was taking up space. Yeah. They would have been better off playing with 10. Yeah. You know, they're in that kind of position where all they have is the Casemiro-Mainoo connection.
Yeah.
They're going to have to find someone to replace Casemiro with that's equally as effective.
So Anderson's and going better, to City, you would think.
It looks like it, yeah.
But Caicedo or Andre Onana, they're the...
Caicedo, like Chelsea aren't going to sell Caicedo to, like, United aren't going to have the money to buy Caicedo.
They will. Champions League, they will.
Really? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I would love if United went for Caicedo, but I think more realistic is to have a look at the two Newcastle lads and Bruno Guimaraes and Sandro Tonali. Where are they going to end up next season? I know Tonali's been linked with Arsenal, but he's also been linked with Manchester United and Manchester City. I think Tonali would be a great get for United, but how they structure the team and build the team for next season is going to be very different to what the team is now because just of the nature of the players that you have. Like,
what do we think about Liverpool and what their next season looks like?
I don't know. Can I just have one more point about United just really quickly and then we'll talk about Liverpool? But Elliot Anderson, if he is going to go to Man City in much the same way as Semenyo, and like that City are the... they're never going to be the sentimental favourite. They're never going to be the team that fans or pundits or, you know, media are going to think of as the place you should go. But the fact that players are consistently choosing them, and it's such a... like, that's going to take such a change. That's going to take such a long time to change. Mm. So if there is that... Do you remember that whole Man United, who could they buy a striker, and Keane just angrily saying, go and buy Kane from Spurs.
Mm.
Why can't you just do that? That's what Man United always did. And they're like, it's a different world now, Roy. It probably was similar. They probably could have done that then if they actually had the will to do it.
Yeah.
Now I'm not sure they can just go and buy whoever they want. They're almost too long out of it. We still think of Manchester United as the legacy of them.
Yeah,
you know, in a fan kind of way. And I don't know if up and coming players in their mid 20s think of United as the destination it could be anymore.
We thought that last year, but then they still managed to get like Brian Mbeumo, Benjamin Sesko. Okay, he's one of the highest rated strikers in European football last year. He still went to Man United when he probably had the chance to go to Arsenal. Maybe Arsenal
chose against them, is my understanding of the situation.
They
chose to go for Gyökeres instead of Sesko. They weren't going to be able to buy both.
Yeah, which is probably been proven wrong.
Absolutely. Sorry, that's a whole different conversation.
And
it's not that they've no pulling power. I just don't think that, like, they should be able to get Elliot Anderson if they want. And that's how United would rebuild if this hadn't gone on for 13 years.
Yeah, well, Ruben Amorim was fuming in the middle of the season when United didn't go and get Antoine Semenyo.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of that, but then there's a lot of players there that would still want to go and play for Manchester United.
Last season, for example,
Mbeumo, one of the best... highest goal scorers in the Premier League, Newcastle are in for him and they're in the Champions League, and he's like, no, I'll go and play for Man United.
I know, but that's Newcastle. You know, like, I just think if City were in for him, that's where I'm talking about. I'm talking about United getting back to the absolute peak, top of the game. I'm not talking about like being a Champions League team or being a big club, but being like that, the club. And it's weird to me that City are, because I think that is only in football. I think that's only in players. I still don't think they're being treated that way.
Yeah,
outside of it. Sorry.
When you say outside, you mean by us?
By media, by fans, on social media.
Why would you play for City? I do think it'll be very interesting to see if Pep leaving or staying has any impact on that.
Agreed.
An unknown at this point. I was making this point during the week. like City have totally recast their team. They now do have attacking players who have that level of pace that we saw from both Bayern and PSG in the wide areas. I don't think Doku is as good as the ones that we saw during the week. Semenyo might be, you know, next yeah. season. Let's wait and see when he's got a full season at Man City. And maybe Doku, with his hamstrings totally healed and they're not going to get a full preseason this year, maybe he can reach the levels that we saw during the week.
Never get probably, a preseason again.
Probably a little bit beyond that. I'd love to see Pep for another year at City now against Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah. But, like, the minutes that these players are playing, especially in the Premier League, is kind of... Is that what's holding them back to compete at the top end of the Champions League?
Maybe. City, you would say, have your Foden's, etc., to be able to come in and yeah. take space, play, score goals. Phil Foden scored 7 goals in the Premier League this season.
Yeah. But hasn't done not much since. But
no. I think their squad should be big enough to be able to compete. And I know that people are asking that, like, you know, Kvaratskhelia basically takes off Liga and just plays the big games. And
But the problem is, though, with those, when those players come in for City, like Phil Foden, even like Tijani Reinders, who's like, you know, one of the best midfielders in Italy last season, Omar Marmoush, they don't seem to be trusted by Pep. And once you're like not trusted by Pep, then you've got a long way to go. And maybe that's one of the criticisms of Guardiola this season, is that he can't bring in the players off the bench and kind of have them humming, you know, straight away. That's maybe what cost him the Champions League, but not being able to balance the two squads or the two teams correctly.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because he's transitioning from everything he knew for 2 decades to something different.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that I'm interested in seeing, how his giant brain works with that. To Liverpool, what are they going to do? How do they rescue next season what has been a bit of a disaster for them? It looks like Alisson is going.
Mm.
Do they need a different keeper? The Georgian's good. Is he good enough?
Yeah. I think it was Owen Doyle. Was Owen Doyle on about left-footed goalkeepers recently on here? That it's just not a good thing. Just the angle of passes and different things. So I know Mamre, it's a weird thing, but it's only like a footballer insight that you get that. I don't know if Liverpool go out and try and buy another goalkeeper. Mamre, actually, they spent a fair bit of money on him, and then they kind of...
Zeker Casillas left-footed.
He was, yeah, but like in the modern game, was he as good as maybe, I don't know, that's a different debate.
He's probably as good as anyone Owen played with, in fairness, but like
I just thought it was an interesting point, but I don't know if Liverpool go out and buy another goalkeeper. That's like another...
I don't think they do. No. I think
not next season. They may prove that they need to, but that's another thing that Liverpool need. Like, this is the problem with Liverpool. Robertson is gone. Like, you know, there was a conversation during the year that Liverpool like would need, after spending an absolute fortune last summer, would need to buy 6 players this year.
Still, yeah.
You know, you lose Alisson, you're probably bumping that up to 7, or maybe you're pushing a couple of them down the line to the following year. But they're in kind of massive rebuild project, and it's still like, what do they do?
I don't know. I don't,
what they do is they try with Ekitike out for the foreseeable, is they try and concentrate the rest of this season on a Vert Isak partnership and see if they can make something of that. But
is that a 4-4-2 ish thing? Where it's not the 3 up front.
While Salah's out as well, I would say that's probably the best thing to do, isn't it? Isn't it like to have 2 advanced wide players, but that can slot into midfield? Like.
Yeah, I think that's what Slot had maybe planned to do this season as well, and kind of gradually phase Salah out of the team. But this is kind of the best opportunity that he might have towards the end of the season. And in a front two, ideally, he'll have Ekitike and Isak, and then Verts behind that, and then you have Szoboszlai. I don't know, like, are Liverpool going to hold on to Dominic Szoboszlai? Like, that contract still hasn't been signed.
I think you roll the dice for as long as you have to with that, and try and get him, or you break the bank and you decide that Elliot Anderson is going to be one of your players. He's very good against Villa.
Oh yeah, he's a good player. He's a very, very good player. I'm more convinced about him every time I see him, if you know what I mean. Because it's like, yeah, you do worry sometimes about like somebody that's been well thought of at Forest,
how much they'll step up. But again, the more I see Anderson, the more I think he can kind of do everything, really.
Yeah.
And he's got a real leadership vibe about him as well. Like, you know, yeah. I think he's going to slot in and be a legend, at, you know, kind of a local fan legend at whatever club he goes to. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's mad that how Newcastle had to lose him, I suppose.
I agree and disagree. It's mad that the system is set up that he couldn't develop there, but I also think it's really incompetent that they didn't see what was there, you know, because they could have chosen someone else to get rid of. Like, yeah.
Okay. So
Liverpool, I think Liverpool have steadied the ship a little bit in the last few weeks in a way that would make me think that they'll
start next season. Okay.
I don't know. I think it might keep Slot's job though, and I
think that in the long term that's not good for Liverpool. I think,
you know, I'm trying to witch you on that. Yeah,
I think this is probably the time to move on. Unfortunately, for
and get who though? Xabi Alonso, just because he's a club legend?
No, I wouldn't say because he's a club legend. He has the CV, you know, of being a fairly brilliant coach at Bayer Leverkusen, and Real Madrid is just this particular type of club where clearly his football was never going to work there, or his style, or his manner.
Would that football work at Liverpool?
I think it would. And I think, he plays in a particular way, like with high-flying wing-backs, plays quite attacking, like man-on-man as well, defensively sometimes.
He's got Firth and Frimpong already there.
Yeah, it's kind of made for him to go there.
And in fairness to Liverpool, when Klopp was available, they were like, okay, we're going to go get him. So there might be a bit where Xabi Alonso keeps getting linked with other clubs and that speeds things up. Yeah. They're not going to keep...
Chelsea's job is available as well, like this summer, you know, like there's...
Xabi Alonso at Chelsea, yeah.
Oh, it's been talked about, yeah. I think it would be a disaster for everybody involved, but that doesn't mean that won't happen.
Yeah. I just think... and Slot, like, unbelievable first season, but there has been a noticeable downturn, even, like, kind of towards the end of that season where they won the Premier League. I just think, unfortunately for him and them, it's just been... Yeah, and I know what happened during the summer last year was horrific, and that should also be taken into account, but... Yeah, it's been maybe just the best for everyone just to move on.
I think there's part of that is true, and then the other part of it is that Slot deserves the start of next season as a league-winning manager with that team to go, we had a trauma, we didn't deal with it very well. We also had to say goodbye to the greatest striker that the club has seen.
Yeah.
And
like we Luis did that in a Diaz. Relatively... Look at Luis Diaz the last couple of games we've been watching him, like, you know.
But Liverpool should have slapped a contract on him 100%. 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So, that game is the 3:30 on Sunday, weird kickoff time. Yeah. Darren Gibson on COCOM alongside Stephen Doyle, live and off the ball, Man United versus Liverpool. Where do you want to go next? Do we want to do Arsenal Fulham?
Yeah.
Do we want to do Monday Night Football, Everton versus Manchester City?
Probably put them in together, I would say, really, if we want to talk about Arsenal and City. We've kind of done our bit on City, but I think Everton, that's the fixture that they're almost looking down at as the, you know, potential banana skin, not to use a cliche, but in the City 4-in-a-row team and kind of like all the way through the Pep era, we've been looking at these fixtures on the calendar and thinking, oh, they won't want to go to Everton on a Monday night. That's like, you know, that's potential drop point. And it never really ever has been. They always find a way of winning, especially this time of the year. And I suppose this is where we almost judge our City actually back on a real run here, or are they the team they showed us to be early on the season? And that's why I just find it fascinating. I actually couldn't predict it because I don't know where City are. I do feel like they've been a bit better, but I also kind of like they've been slightly vulnerable as well. They were terrible in the cup game against Southampton. Could have lost it. Like genuinely could have lost it. Like that was 82 minutes as Zaha scores. They were poor against Burnley. Like they scored early after like a couple of minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And controlled the game and then started to get a little bit, you know, I don't know if they're like a little bit tetchy, I would say, towards the end. And that game ends with Burnley peppering their goal.
Yeah.
And Burnley have been in awful form and obviously were confirmed relegated that night. So I just don't know what to expect.
Yeah, but Arsenal having Fulham, I think, is quite a good game to have again at home, as in Fulham have an outside chance of Europe, but really what's on the Fulham players' minds at the moment, like Harry Wilson's going, probably going to try and get a nice contract somewhere else. Marcus Silva looks like he's going.
Iwobi missed last week. I don't know if he's going to be back. Obviously it's a big game for him, but
Arsenal like need to not basically beat themselves. Like they're just so nervous, so apprehensive, especially when they play at home. But this is an unbelievable opportunity to put themselves 6 points clear before Man City go to Everton. And Everton, you know, under David Moyes especially, don't have a great record against, like, let's say the traditional big six, but they actually do all right against Man City. I remember a few years ago, I remember the famous Rodri handball as well, where it wasn't given, and Man City go on to win the league. So,
ooh, yeah, wow.
It's a massive opportunity for, you know, could David Moyes do one of his old players and Mikel Arteta a nice little favour, and Arsenal maybe are 3 or 4
Arsenal
points
don't
clear.
Beat Fulham, City will definitely win.
Yeah.
You can probably agree on that, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal will beat Fulham, though.
I do as well.
They were okay the other night, weren't they? Like, it's like, yeah, they should have won that game realistically. Like.
Second half, they were good.
Yeah,
I do worry for them even going back into that Champions League semi-final because it's at home. And it's not because their home form is bad, it's just because the nature of the football and the style of play and what they're on the precipice of just makes the whole environment at the Emirates kind of toxic and nervous.
Yeah, and you also think that Atleti have basically given up in the league. I think they're basically safe in fourth, aren't they? They may have picked up a point or two, but like Arsenal are going into every Premier League game is the biggest thing, and they're playing Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. It's not the time of year for that. Almost, they can't really rest players on Saturday.
No.
Saka start, I would say, on Saturday.
Well, try and get him into form, maybe.
Yeah,
I thought he looked okay coming off the bench, but was he only fit for that period of time? Is that the available minutes they had? Is that what the sports science was telling them, or is he too scared to play his best players in the big games? I'm assuming that it was an injury and that they're minding him because they want him to be able to have an
impact. Just hasn't played much. They played Odegaard and Eze together against Newcastle, and it just seemed a little bit different. They've still only won 1-0 with an early goal and were nervy, but they're going to be that way. But I do wonder if they are starting to realise they need to unlock a little bit of creativity in slightly different ways, and that their way that they were bullying teams earlier in the year has probably reached past its peak at this stage.
Yeah. It's interesting. I remember when Eze signed for Arsenal and you said like he could be the league winning signing, and then he started well, and then he kind of, after that Villa game where they got beat away from home, he gave away a goal and he kind of went out of the
punished.
Team.
Yeah.
But now he was so close to scoring that goal against Man City, like he actually could be now that X factor Premier League winning signing. So
is he fit? He came off injured after
he's been struggling.
The penalty thing the other night, did he?
He's been struggling with that injury.
Yeah. He came off the previous week and then came off the bench and then So maybe it's all fitness. Can I just briefly digress here to talk about Brighton and Villa? Brighton's final four fixtures of the season. They're at Newcastle on Saturday at 3 o'clock.
Win.
Then they have Wolves at home.
Win.
Then they have an either already relegated Leeds or an already safe Leeds away.
But they won't be already relegated, but yeah, they'll be.
Probably safe by then stage. On the beach.
Away.
Yeah. And then finally of the season, they have a Man United team with none to play for. 12 points.
I'll give them 10.
They have a good record against Man United.
Yeah, I'll give them 10 points. They're not going to win all four of those games, but I'll give them 10.
And
what would that put them onto? They're 8 points behind Villa at the moment, are they? Villa are playing Spurs at home this week.
They're 8 points behind, so
and
that would
Burnley
put them on 60
week.
I wouldn't be knocking off 12 there. Villa have, you're right, Spurs and then Burnley, and then they have Arsenal and City.
No, Liverpool and City.
Liverpool and City.
Yeah. Yeah, Liverpool at home. City away last season.
Maybe Liverpool will already have qualified as well. And they've play for
I just think
they play out the string of boring nil all draw.
Villa have two home fixtures, and they've Burnley. I just can't see them not even hobbling over the line. Really, you know. Look, we are nervous people, Ger, and we are negative. And I've watched enough Villa this season to know that I'm not even particularly sure I like this team anymore. I have to say, but they might have already done the work.
Yeah. I can't see anyone catching Villa. But then I suppose the thing for Brighton is that Bournemouth and Chelsea and Brentford and Fulham and Everton and even Sunderland are still all chasing those last two European spots. And you never know what happens in the Europa League, what happens in the Champions League, how many spots there will be there available to qualify for European football next season.
We have a fair idea what's happening in the Europa League after that. Last night, Villa are not going through to the final.
I think that's 1-0.
It's 1-0. It's
not Forrest don't have a great record at Villa Park.
No.
Despite Kenny Cunningham deciding that they were only 50 miles up the road, so it wasn't really a big deal. That home and away.
I actually kind of sent a video from the City Ground last night. Dad was there for the first time in a long time. He's a Forrest fan. And he said the atmosphere was...
It was great.
Electric.
Sounded amazing on TV, so you can imagine. Yeah.
I think Forrest as well. I think they're in a nice vein of form at the minute where I think I back them to still stay up as well, despite the European games.
They're playing Chelsea at Stamford Bridge at 3 o'clock on Monday, which is a nice little bank holiday treat.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Bizarre fixture, timing.
Yeah, you can go Chelsea, then you go into there's five League of Ireland games at 5 o'clock, and then you can
and
go into your
Everton game.
Everton Man City.
Eight, yeah.
And then snooker in the background.
And the snooker
as well.
on the tablet.
Yeah. but yeah, interestingly though, for that Villa Spurs game, like Spurs will know obviously the West Ham result from the day before. Like that's going to put serious pressure on De Zerbi. And the pressure that Spurs as a club are under, especially financially after that story in the Athletic during the week, is like
it's a big one.
I didn't see that one. I just saw the
Spurs have got a new range of merchandise which they have exclusively launched in the last week. Now you can celebrate your love of Peppa Pig and Spurs at the same time.
Right, okay.
So that was the only story I saw about Spurs this week. What was your story?
The story I seen was like basically financially that obviously if they go down, it is like serious, serious problems.
Debt on the stadium type thing.
Yeah, debt on the stadium because... Yeah, they're not going to sell it. The only thing that is kind of there to maybe alleviate that pressure is the big events like your Anthony Joshua boxing fights,
NFL.
Concerts and the NFL.
Yeah.
Other than that, they're going to struggle and they will hemorrhage a lot of players. And interestingly, from an Irish perspective for Spurs this week, Mason Mealy was called up to train with the first team.
Oh, great.
Right, okay.
And Troy Parrott is continuously linked with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Parrot back to Spurs.
I hope he doesn't go to Spurs.
I hope he doesn't go either.
I
hope he doesn't go back to England, but if he does, I think he could be a big player for Everton.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good signing.
I would like to see him at Borussia Dortmund or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say we'll find out soon enough.
2 seasons at Dortmund and then replace Harry Kane. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Bayer did tweet the parrot emoji. When they won the Dutch Cup.
Well, yeah, why was that?
Nobody really knows.
Okay.
They tweeted the parrot emoji and eyes from the Bayern Munich account.
Well, Nicholas Jackson is leaving Bayern Munich, so a backup to Harry Kane again?
Would you love
weird
for
way
to
of
have
announcing
the experience
it.
Be like a sub at Bayern, because you'd play a load of football.
Oh, 100%, yeah. You have Elise and Luis Diaz both sides,
well,
and Musiala behind you. Kimmich and Pavlovic.
Yeah, well, what would the dream?
Where did Colo Muani go after? Yeah,
Villa's last five
Spurs.
Four results. Home results in the Premier League against Forest. 2-0, 4-2, 2-1 and 3-1.
So Villa have beaten Spurs twice already this season, both in London in the FA Cup and in the league, but right before Spurs' collapse, they almost kind of like initiated it really. Morgan Rodgers scored an unbelievable goal and they've been like sort of had their number a little bit over the last couple of years. There's a kind of a feisty enough atmosphere in the Villa Spurs games actually. Yeah, Matt Cash gets a lot of stick. But I wonder is Spurs, if Villa were playing a team in 18th in between these two games with the European situation, as we pointed out, I kind of feel like they wouldn't take it as big. I don't know. I still feel there's something about Spurs that feels like a big game. They were the two teams who were racing for that fourth and fifth place in Ange's first season, and Villa got there ahead of them. And I kind of think that there's a bit of it. Maybe it's a new rivalry or something like that, but there's definitely a feeling of Villa trying to knock Spurs off the perch of being this top six thing.
Yeah.
And I think that'll feed into Villa's performance a little
bit.
Certainly
the fans,
so,
anyway. They'll be up for it.
Not great for Spurs is kind of what I mean, but it doesn't mean they can't get a result because Villa's form is atrocious, to be honest.
Yeah, last week we were saying Villa's form is great and they're going to cruise through, and then it got blown off pretty quickly.
Performances, though, have been
a week
poor.
Is a long time in football, it turns out. Right, that's this week's episode of Inside the Odds, our Premier League preview show on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. A reminder that the big game this week is Manchester United versus Liverpool, which means NoviBet will offer a €10 free bet If your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League game of the weekend every weekend, now we're better offering the best value on football betting with a risk-free bet builder on all the biggest Premier League and Champions League matches. See you next week.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
GAA.
I think that I wouldn't be writing anything in stone yet. You know, I wouldn't be proclaiming that we have a 2010 here. I wouldn't be proclaiming we're on the brink of a 5 in a row either. But I think it's a very enjoyable era of Gaelic football that we're in as teams try and figure themselves out.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.